General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
On February the 14th, 1858, Joseph Thompson was born in Dumfriesshire. Now, the name Thompson doesn't mean very much. If you say Joseph Thompson, explorer, and add perhaps Thompson's gazelle, it might mean a bit more. But it's surprising how many of these giants of the past have faded almost from human memory and have life only in dusty reference libraries. I took out a volume on Thompson the other day. The last date stamp was 1923. The librarian warned me to be careful with it, because it was true Afrikaner. He seemed so enthusiastic that I asked him if he knew much about Joseph Thompson. Didn't he fight the Maasai, he asked. Beyond this, his knowledge was nil. I did a little research. I wrote to old friends in Kenya, where Thompson's Falls and the gazelle are to be found. There's a whole mass of information about this young man who was once lionized by London society and loved it, yet who blushed like a girl when paid a compliment. I think Joseph Thompson's story is well worth telling. I've all the time in the world for any man who could fool the Maasai. The way north.
Stanley who?
Young Joseph was a great dreamer. He devoured the novels of Walter Scott and was known to weep because the days of high adventure were no more. He was a keen naturalist, and when only a child, he had papers on plants and birds published in scientific journals. Stanley set out on his immortal search for Dr. Livingstone when Thompson was only a boy. But when Thompson was 20, 3 years after the assassination of President Lincoln and the end of the Civil War, the dreamer dreamed a dream of Africa.
Africa? What do you want to go there for, boy? What's the matter with Scotland?
Scotland, father. Scotland's a beautiful country. The most beautiful in the world. But I want to see Africa.
I have no desire to see this Africa.
Have you not, father? Well, you're not me, and I'm not you. I want to go, father. And there's a chance that's come my way, too.
Chance? To go there?
Aye. The Royal Geographic Society's planning an expedition to the chain of lakes that run up the center of Africa. I want to apply for the position of field naturalist with them, father. I think they may take me. I've offered my services cheaply.
But why... Why do you want to go and look at lakes for? I don't know lakes here.
Aye, father. There are beautiful lakes here. But the ones in Central Africa are a wee bit different.
But do you know where these lakes are? Will you no lose your way and become lost?
No, father. We shall have a fine leader. A man already experienced in the African exploration. May I go, father? Edinburgh University has given me a degree. The expedition have offered me a post. All I need now is your permission to go.
Aye, and if I refuse you?
Then I will still go, father.
Then, in the interests of family peace, you'd best have my permission. Is Dr. Livingstone there by these lakes, do you know?
The expedition left London, and Joseph Thompson was its field naturalist. During the trip, the expedition's leader died, and Thompson took over, in spite of his extreme youth. He stayed to lead two more expeditions, and when he returned to Britain at the age of 25, it was already with the reputation of a great African explorer.
By heaven, Joseph, you've chosen the life. You've chosen the life, and it's for me. It's for me, I tell you. Now, where do I sign? I'm for your next expedition. I'll wash bottles, kill flies, I'll cook. It'll have to be Irish stew, but never mind. I'll do anything you assign to me.
Charles, listen. Will you listen? I can find a place for you with all the pleasure in the world. But you have to know what you're in for, man.
In for?
Aye. You see, the El Dorado of East Africa is Uganda. In Uganda are the great elephant herds. And you've noticed, no doubt, the price of ivory on the market. Now, routes to Uganda are two, and two only. Across Tanganyika to the Central Lakes, and then north to Lake Victoria. No good. Too long, fever-ridden swamps. Why, you'd lose two-thirds of your party along the way. No, Charles. The route is the shorter one. The northern route. A straight line northwest from Mombasa, direct to Uganda, across the British part.
Then why isn't this route contemplated?
Why? Because it's unexplored.
Well, why? Why doesn't someone do this? Why hasn't it already been done?
I'll tell you why. In one word, I'll tell you why. Maasai.
Maasai. What the Zulus were to South Africa, the Maasai were to Kenya. A tribe of professional fighters, living on the tribes around them, much as the lions and leopards lived on the antelope. Their diet was a mixture of blood and milk. They ate no vegetables, no wild game. They were over 6 feet tall, thin, and possessed a terrifying strength. When a boy of 14, he was taken into the warrior band. He became a Moran, and was given the great buffalo hide shield to carry into battle. He lived for warring, for looting and raiding, and carrying off women. Maasai Moran. Thompson knew what the Maasai were capable of. He had passed already through an area in the wake of a Maasai war party.
On our return journey, a most harrowing sight presented itself. What only a few days before had been a prosperous village standing amid fields of grain were now smoking ruins. Bodies lay in all directions. Here and there, a few survivors sat with their heads in their hands, hardly noticing our passing caravan, and apparently in the lowest depths of misery and despair. I questioned one of these solitary individuals and learned that the Maasai had unexpectedly arrived one morning at dawn, spearing and burning all before them, and carrying off 250 women and large herds of cattle.
In 1883, the Royal Geographic Society planned an expedition to explore this northern route, and Thompson, at the age of 26, was selected to lead it. The men who opened up this continent were a strange lot. Thompson was perhaps one of the strangest. A precocious young man with an uncanny insight into the native temperament, he succeeded where many others had failed. Knowing full well that he couldn't force his way through Maasai land, he threw himself on the natives' mercy, and by a series of parlor tricks, and taking desperate chances, won through to Lake Victoria.
Charles has decided to accompany me. He's a brave man and will be invaluable. March the 6th, 1883. We are about to leave Zanzibar for Mombasa, the gateway to East Africa. We plan to rise each day at 5 and start at dawn. There will be a long rest in the middle of the day, after which we shall then march until nightfall.
The first great obstacle was the Taru Desert. The porters immediately threw down their loads and refused to continue.
Fetch the ringleaders and hang them, Joseph. This is the only way we'll win through and reach the Savo River. Hang the ringleaders. Alice!
No! There'll be no hanging. No hanging here. Do you hear me, Charles? I'll lead this party and what I say shall be.
Oh, your tolerance is dash foolish, Joseph, and very, very dangerous.
I shall be the judge of that. Annie, bring these men to their feet. Use the caboto on them. On your feet! We're going on! We shall leave you to die!
And Ali the Bull, a huge negro who carried nothing but a kiboko to persuade men who did not wish to continue that they were being at the very least foolish. Ali the Bull, in this instance too, persuaded the porters that the Taru Desert was not such a bad place after all. The expedition reached the Tsavo River. And the porters, thoroughly dehydrated by the terrible desert, ran straight into the river, pulling off their clothes as they ran. Thompson and Charles Best were about to follow suit when...
Oh, for goodness sake.
Come on, Joseph, let's... Well, what is it?
Where did those women come from?
Women? Oh, those women. They're watching us.
One of them's laughing.
You know jolly well what they're waiting for us to do, don't you?
Quite. Oh, I so badly wanted to swim, too.
And the two white men, although in a bad state, as well as the porters, sat on the banks of the stream until nightfall, and then, protected by darkness, stripped and took a swim. The Victorian code of behavior. The expedition pushed on and entered Wakamba country. There had recently been a war between Maasai and Wakamba, the Wakamba enjoying a great advantage in the thick bush. The Wakamba used bows and poisoned arrows. They were magnificent marksmen. One morning, while the party was camped, one of the askaris brought in the body of one of the porters. The man had a small arrow between his shoulder blades.
Wakamba?
The askari, standing in front of the explorer, nodded silently and pointed to his left. Thompson looked. There were seven Wakamba bowmen, standing like statues in the early morning. Their bows were fitted with arrows. The bowstrings were taut.
How frightfully unpleasant. Terribly unsporting, too, when you come to think of it.
Good morning! You're just in time for breakfast. Do you like tea?
The Wakamba moved closer and stood again like statues.
What a silly way to die. We can't even explain to them. They don't speak English, do they?
Do you speak English?
No, of course you don't. Well, give the askaris the order and we might kill one or two of them, but... I say, I've just noticed an extraordinary thing. Every blasted one of them is pointing his arrow at me. I should look like a confounded pincushion.
Just then, Ali the Bull appeared. He walked slowly, so as to avoid alarming the Wakamba and provoking them into action. The warrior's eyes shifted to the huge black man. Two of them covered him, still not uttering a word. Ali walked up to Joseph Thompson and solemnly handed him a galvanic battery, complete with two electrodes.
Ali, you're a splendid man. For this I'll have you knighted.
And now then, would you like to try this for size? It's great fun, you know. You just catch hold of the ends of these two wee things and see what happens. Now here, you. Would you like to try?
Thompson held out the electrodes towards the largest of the Wakamba.
Just like this. See?
And then one of the Wakamba warriors grinned. He grinned guiltily at first, for he was a warrior, and warriors should appear fierce. Then he glanced at his fellow warriors, and two of those were smiling. So, relaxing the bowstring and placing both bow and arrow upon the ground, he tentatively reached out towards the electrodes of the galvanic battery. Now, this type of battery was quite capable of giving a man a strong shock. The current contracts the muscles, you see, and it's very difficult to let go. Then the warrior grasped the electrodes.
How does that feel?
The other Wakamba were shocked for the moment. They feared for their comrade's life, turned their bows upon Joseph and the Ascaris, a fight seemed imminent, and then... The expedition moved on. In 5 marches, the explorer and his men covered 230 miles. Thompson began to experience frequent black moods of despair. He succumbed to such fits of hopelessness that it was a miracle his health did not give way.
What am I striving after? Well, fame? Oh, I know I shall never find either. I'm condemned to be a failure.
The mood passed, and Thompson became his usual confident self. Despite the fact that he was losing porters daily, he was determined to succeed in his quest. He was determined to open up the route north. But to do this with the remnants of his porter troop was impossible. So, Joseph Thompson made a decision.
Charles, I shall return to Mombasa. I shall take a handful of men, capable men, and I shall return to Mombasa. And then I shall tackle the northern route through Masailand.
Thompson left Charles and most of the party. He recrossed the Taru Desert and nearly died. He hit a period of drought. He had dysentery. And at one time, the explorer had to crawl on hands and knees for almost 3 miles. And then he reached the coastal town of Mombasa, engaged new porters, and set out again. His journey was surprisingly easy, until he reached Masailand, that is. Oh no, the warriors didn't charge him with shining spears. No, the young Moran walked up to him, looked him in the eyes, and...
Ow!
pulled the Scotsman's nose. And they followed him for 3 weeks. Spearing lions was, for these Maasai Morani, no sport at all. They had found a white man to tease. The explorer kept his journal well up to date.
They are like my shadows. They never allow me a moment's peace. Following, following, always following. And the women are very much amused by me. Only yesterday we came to a Maasai settlement. There were a few of the Moran. I've no doubts that they were away somewhere killing some poor unfortunate creatures. Only women and old men were left. The women subjected me to a good many indignities. It seems to be their ambition to strip me naked because they can't seem to agree on whether a white man is white all over or only down to his shoulders.
Imagine how reluctant the young Victorian was to write that. He could never have spoken such words. And then Thompson learned a secret. The Maasai is like a child. He's cruel, very cruel. But like all children, these warriors may easily be diverted. One early evening, when Thompson's party was resting, a band of Morani arrived on the scene. Immediately, they began to tease the white man.
They played with me like a cat with a mouse. They swept their simis, their knives, within a hair's breadth of my face, while their fellows were pricking the porters to make them jump and scream. A small group with Datos, girlfriends, crowded round me today, and repeatedly ordered me to strip. Then I had an idea. I must confess, although I say it myself, it was a brilliant stroke. I took out my 2 false teeth. Suddenly, I'm a magician. I'm most popular. Another thing they like is a wee mirror that they like to look at themselves in. But the greatest piece of trickery is some water and a wee spoonful of effervescent fruit salts. They are unable to understand how I can drink boiling water. I found one warrior who talks a kind of English. His delight is a photograph of some friends of mine in England.
Ah.
Ah, you like it, do you? Friends. These are friends. Friends of mine.
You?
Hmm? What do you want?
You make these friends come from pictures.
No, I'm afraid that's not really possible. You see...
Yes!
At this point, the first man raised his spear. Every muscle in his body wished to plunge it into the man who refused to make people come out of a photograph.
Look, these people...
People?
Aye. They're asleep.
Asleep.
We continue to map the route to Uganda. We stop at every convenient hill. I set up my theodolite and take readings. I've had 100 warriors peering through the sextant. We have measured the height of the largest mountain. We have discovered a beautiful waterfall. Is it vanity which allows me, nay, forces me to name this falling water Thompson's Falls? I have also found what I believe to be a new species of gazelle. Again, vanity, for the time being anyway. Thompson's gazelle.
And then, in December, a few days after a running skirmish with Kavirondo, a stark naked tribe who believed the white men came with a potent magic that would cause the lake to disappear, the Askaris told the explorer that they were near the lake. Came another day, and from the advance party came...
The march became a run. The range was crossed and the men staggered through a mud and reed stretch of swamp to a lake. My porters splashed water over one another and cried for joy. We had reached our destination.
Joseph Thompson returned to England, where he was hailed as a hero. But after a few months in London, he became restless for Africa again.
I'm doomed to be a wanderer. I'm not an empire builder. I'm not a missionary. I'm not truly a scientist. I merely want to return to Africa and continue my wanderings.
Joseph Thompson did return to Africa, although by now he was riddled with tropical diseases. He went up the Niger River to the Sudan, explored Zambezia, and traveled across the Atlas Mountains in Morocco. In 1895, he returned to England. His clergyman brother carried the great explorer from the train like a baby. No great feat, this, for by now Thompson was little more than a skeleton. A few days later, he lay on his bed, and the doctor, after taking his flickering pulse, looked up meaningly at the waiting relatives. Thompson caught the look and smiled.
If I was strong enough to put on my clothes and walk 100 yards, I would go to Africa yet.
A short time later, he died. Already, missionaries and traders were following the northern route he had opened to Uganda. Already, forts and trading posts were springing up on the sites of his old camps. Although Joseph Thompson had died before he could see the results of his trek, he had made possible the opening of Uganda and the settling of Kenya.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.